Welcome to Hero Hype, episode 10. I'm Marima.
And I'm Danya.
We have so much to talk about this week. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back. We have a lot of interesting news in the realm of superhero spin-off shows. We've got an update on the Spider-Man front. Plus, in time for the new Daredevil trailer, we have some comic book recommendations to get you started. And we give you a brief history of some guy called Hawkeye. You've probably never heard of him. Before we get to that, remember, you can always get in touch with us on Twitter at Hero Hype Podcast. And you can leave us a comment on this post on hyperbull.com. So, I think it's going to be a fairly TV-heavy show because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back and there's a lot to talk about. We've had two episodes so far. We're still in mourning for Agent Carter, obviously, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is doing a pretty good job of distracting me. How are you enjoying it, Dee?
It was a pretty awesome welcome back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I was very, very surprised by a couple of things, especially like Simmons' reaction to a lot of stuff. And man, it's just hit the ground running. It's like it didn't let up at all from where it left off when it took a break for Agent Carter. And it's going at like 100 miles an hour. And I'm really, really excited. I'm kind of like at the end of every episode, I'm like sitting there going, yeah, but I don't want to wait another week for the next episode.
Yeah, I'm really liking it. I was really surprised, I guess, how much they really threw themselves into the Inhuman storyline, especially with the latest episode with the Kree and Lady Sif and all of this. Because as we talked about last time with, you know, slightly disgruntled reactions, the Inhumans film has now been pushed to 2019. It's a long time to wait. Like, that's a very slow build, yeah, you know, from now till then. And I'm curious how they're going to sustain that, how they're going to link it together. I don't know. That, you know, I guess that's just sort of like a structural thing that I'm like, how is this all going to work together? In terms of the actual content of what we're seeing on S.H.I.E.L.D., it's fantastic. I think this is really what the show needed. It expands it outside of this S.H.I.E.L.D. Hydra fight that it's not that we're getting sick of it, but it has sort of dragged on. I laughed very hard in the first episode when they, you know, use the Hydra members to assassinate each other, basically. And they do so by sending out this, like, what they were like the Hydra dark marks, like, on the watches by being like, all right, guys, it's time. I found that so funny. I was like, really, Hydra? So high tech, but you're essentially using a Fitbit to, like, oh, it's vibrating. That's it. Time to do the thing.
All I was thinking in the back of my head is the evil uses for the Apple Watch.
Seriously. Yeah, you can bet these guys both are like $20,000 one. But yeah, I think it's, you know, it's good. I'm enjoying, I guess I'm really enjoying the friendship between Sky and Fitz at the moment, which I was never really on board with. I think a lot of people see it as a romantic relationship and I don't, but a lot of people were not really into it because they thought it was interfering with Fitzsimmons as a romantic relationship. I kind of don't want Fitz and Simmons to get together because Gemma is a jerk right now. But I really, really like just the kind of supportive relationship that Sky has going on with May, especially, and with Fitz. I thought that was really interesting how Fitz was pointing out to Mac how, yeah, I know exactly what you're going through. Mac's like, have you ever felt like this? Fitz is like, dude, yes, this has been my entire character arc for this season. Have you not been paying attention?
I love that as well. I really, really like the kind of stepping outside of the box in terms of the relationships we've had so far, and they're breaking some of them down and building different ones up. And I think with a show that's got an ensemble cast, that's really, really important, because if you keep putting together different combinations of characters, it's going to push your show in really, really different ways. And I think the ones that they're pushing right now are really, really great for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm really, really, really into Fitz being Sky's kind of support network almost, because I think it's such a really, really nice friendship. And I mean, even like back in season one, I really like the dynamic between Sky and Fitzsimmons, but it's really, really interesting to see how when Sky has essentially the core of her like DNA has changed and she's become something else, how that changes her relationships with both of those characters who she was kind of close to before and had a really friendly, really kind of nice relationship with, like who stands by her and who kind of goes off on the crazy wagon.
Yeah, I think you're right. And also, you know, I guess just to keep the interest of the viewer, you kind of needed one of the core original members of S.H.I.E.L.D. to be on the opposing side to Sky. Because yeah. if it was a very clear line drawn between the old guard and the new guard, you know, it would have lacked interest somewhat. So I understand why they did that. And, you know, I think it makes sense because Simmons really does have this preoccupation with it being a virus. And she keeps talking about it as a virus and a plague and finding a cure and all of these things. And remember, like, she was infected by an alien virus. And she was willing to sacrifice herself, basically, for that. Meanwhile, sorry, I just reminded myself, where is Ward? Like,
do we care?
We don't. I'm assuming that he's going to come back, though. Probably. I have totally forgotten that he existed since the final, the mid-season finale, like, since we saw that episode to now. I just totally forgot about him. Anyway, tangent. You know, I think that makes sense because she kind of sees it as a problem, something to solve, and you know, Fitz in a way has gone through a more emotional journey in terms of him facing his own body, like changing or not reacting the way that he was used to, and his mind and all of this. So you know, that makes sense. I'm very, very interested to see what's going on with Mac and Bobby. I'm sure you are as well, number one Bobby fan. I know I've talked about this on the show before, but I don't like Mac at all. I've never liked Mac. It's not even that I dislike him, although now I dislike him, but before I just didn't care about him. Now he's beating up on my boy Hunter. I'm having a problem. But yeah. What do you think is going on there? What's the plan?
I'm actually not really sure. Like, I've been trying to theorize as to who they're kind of working for, like, all the way from, are they like underground keeping tabs on things for a different fraction of S.H.I.E.L.D. that's split off? Are they working with like a different organization separate from all of the ones we've been introduced to so far? Like, I don't know what they're going with, because the thing with Barbie in the comics, she's the ultimate double agent. Like, she tends to like go undercover a lot and play like every different side. So a lot of the time it's really hard to know where her motivations lie. So it's really, really difficult to try and pinpoint and figure out, you know, what they're working for. I'm really interested to see where they take it and if it's just something completely new, because that for me would be the most interesting thing. If it's something they haven't necessarily taken completely from the comic books, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of becoming its own thing. It's taking elements of things that we know from the comic books, but putting its own spin on it and moving it in like a completely different direction. So I'm kind of hoping it's something that I'm not going to know. I really, really hope that it is, because I like being surprised. I don't like knowing everything. I like it when they take elements of something that I'm really familiar with or know really, really well, and they kind of twist it and turn it upside down and shake it by the ankles until I don't know what they're doing anymore. And that makes that's kind of what makes Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. so interesting to me, because they started introducing the parts of the Inhuman storyline that I know, for example, the Kree, and the Kree being the ones who kind of pushed it forward and used them as like genetic experiments in order to make, I guess, disposable soldiers for their kind of army. And I like that they're taking those elements and bringing it in while also having a lot of stuff that I don't know what direction they're going to go in with.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, those are very recognizable elements, and I like that they're integrating that again. You know, slightly curious about how this is all going to play out over, I don't know, the next 4 years until we get that movie. The only other thing about the Inhuman storyline is that I think my hatred of Skye's dad is on par with my hatred of Ward. Like, they're both just really despicable characters, and I dislike both of them so much. And unfortunately, the thing about having a bigger emphasis on the Inhuman storyline is it means we're probably going to have a bigger emphasis on him. So yeah. I'm sure he'll be, you know, hanging around doing the annoying douche thing that Ward was doing while we were all wondering about Hydra. So,
yeah,
we shall see.
The thing that I'm thinking is, like, they're bringing up the Kree quite a lot now. I mean, we're getting that kind of integrated into the wider universe. And I mean, we see a lot of it with the alien races in Guardians of the Galaxy as well. You know, it's starting to, like, fold it all into the wider universe for it. And the interesting thing is that I wonder if we're going to start seeing more elements of the Kree coming in, maybe in, like, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and maybe in some of the Avengers, like, movies, or even some of the standalone ones as well, because we know that, like, they keep saying that Age of Ultron's gonna, like, blow the universe wide open again, and kind of change everything again, and it's just wondering, okay, in what direction are they gonna take it, because they could so easily start folding the Kree. And even to some extent, the Skrulls as well, who are like the Kree's natural enemy, who, you know, they're able to like shapeshift and hide in plain sight almost. If they're a super Skrull, they can change their appearance and essentially become whoever they want to be. So it'd be really, really, really interesting to kind of see how they play that in. Could they play it in? Absolutely. And maybe we'll see kind of the impact of what's happening in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Kind of not in like a massive way, but slowly filtering into the movies, in that they're going to start dropping hints about the Inhumans and kind of linking it all together. And that way, maybe the wait until the Inhumans movie won't be nearly as painful.
Yeah,
apparently is.
Well, yeah, I definitely agree. I think they have to do that. I don't think it's a question of if they do it, because otherwise they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot with all of this. I think Guardians of the Galaxy 2, so the wait for that is 2017. That would be obviously like a natural way for them to start integrating it. But like you said, I sort of wouldn't be surprised if we saw maybe more subtle hints in Age of Ultron, Civil War, you know, in these films that we're going to see in between. Obviously, Guardians makes the most sense because, you know, it kind of presents this natural environment for the introduction of those different characters and species and different planets and et cetera. But yeah, you know, we'll be keeping tabs on all of it as it unfolds in the second half of the season.
I will drop back in my desperate wish for a Young Avengers adaptation by saying one of the characters is actually a Kree Skrull kind of halfling. So that would fit in. Guys, you could totally do it, Marvel. Please.
Well, all right, I have a proposal for you. How about not a Young Avengers movie? What about a Young Avengers miniseries? I'm talking about Netflix, because we got the brand new Daredevil trailer recently. And, you know, obviously this is going to be the very first of this series of Netflix shows that Marvel is doing. It's going to premiere on the 10th of April. Oh my gosh, so, so soon. But I feel like your Young Avengers could definitely work on that platform. So, yeah. You know, just keep that in mind. But speaking of Daredevil, what did you think of the new trailer?
This one I actually liked kind of a lot more than the original trailer that we got. This gave us a little bit more about the scope of what the series is going to look like, and I'm super, super excited. I kind of really, really want to sit down and just watch everything in one go, just do a massive binge watch, because apparently I have no life.
I mean, isn't that the point of Netflix?
Yeah, I know.
Netflix original series, I should say.
Yeah, I've been binge-watching so much on Netflix. It's been crazy.
I would agree. This trailer definitely got me more excited. Although, you know, Daredevil, I still don't love him. I can't help it. I just, I can't get enthused about this. It looks really good. I like the cinematography looks beautiful. I like the tack they're taking with it. The cast looks great. Everything looks great, but it's still like, oh, it's Daredevil, you know? I don't know, somewhat lacking the enthusiasm on my part. I am looking forward to the continuation of my Arrow drinking game while watching this, because I think just trying to make my city a better place basically counts as save my city. And that was already said twice in, this 2-minute trailer. Yeah. So I'm doing well. And I think I think that would definitely translate across, although potentially dangerous if you're watching all 13 episodes at once.
Yeah, and not only that, you don't have to worry about just Matt Murdock saying that. You also have to, worry about Kingpin also saying
it. Yeah, I know.
So you've got two characters who are going off on that kind of make this city a better place thing.
I know. I mean, I know it's such a superhero trope, but sometimes I'm like, guys, I just want to watch a show where, it's not about this one place. You know, it's not about saving this one place. That's why I think I kind of like the scope of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. compared to watching Flash and Arrow in particular, because they are so focused on their, specific cities. And it's nice to get a little go outside sometimes. But whatever, Daredevil will be another one. Yeah. All right, that's it for Marvel news for this week. But what we have the weirdest spin-off I have ever heard of. I don't know how to segue into this. All right, let's, if you wanted to get outside of Flash and Arrow, this is a great way to do that, because here are four of the most random characters you could ever have put together, and that will certainly give you something that is different from everything else you've seen on TV. So the newest spin-off that is in development from the team behind Arrow and The Flash and, everything else that's going on, this show is going to be... I don't even know where to start. Okay, so we've got Ray Palmer, or Atom. We have Dr. Martin Stein, who is half of Firestorm, who we saw recently on The Flash. We have Leonard Snut, who is Captain Cold, my favorite villain of all time. And we have Sarah Lance. Maybe, we don't know. So they've cast the actress. They've said that it's going to be the other three characters, but they haven't said who Katie Lutz is playing. And so everyone's very confused, because obviously Sarah died, spoiler alert, whatever, in Arrow. And, some people are saying, well, perhaps it's a prequel type series, because they've only got Martin Stein. And as we know, he's only half of Firestorm together with Ronnie Raymond. So for that to make sense, maybe it's something pre what we've seen them. But that doesn't really make sense, because then Ray Palmer wouldn't be Atom,
Yeah.
That's kind of what I get caught up on when I think about that theory. That makes the most sense. I don't know. I'm not interested in watching her play anyone except for Sarah. You know what I mean? I don't want to watch, oh my God, clone storyline, or even Lazarus Pit storyline. Kind of seems like a cop out, because I think she's my favorite character from that world. I feel like that's safe to say at this point. So I don't know. As you may have noticed, I'm sort of not sure where to start with this, because it's just the weirdest thing I have ever heard of. And we did have an update on it, which was they've released casting calls for three other characters, and they're calling these characters just by sort of code name. So we've got the Traveler, who is going to be a Han Solo-esque rogue. We've got the Female Warrior, who is a 20-something Latina. People are saying, oh, maybe it's Hawkgirl. Maybe, we've got a whole lot of list of people it could be. And then a Mystery Warrior, who is an African-American male in his 20s. It's all kind of happening in terms of that. And, I like the diversity of the casting call. That's a good sign. Danya, save me from this. What is going on here? Explain it all to me, please.
There is no explanation for this at all. It is absolutely out of left field. It makes no sense. It's probably the strangest superhero team up that I have ever seen. and I've been reading comics for a long time, I've seen some really weird superhero team-ups. I was actually thinking that Lazarus Pit is probably the most logical thing that they could do in terms of bringing Sarah back. Mostly because I know that they're really, really kind of not into the whole magic mysticism thing coming into Arrow. And they don't like... They like kind of keeping that in the Flash more than they do in the Arrow. So it could be that they didn't necessarily want to push forward with the Lazarus Pit in Arrow itself, in terms of like showing it explicitly rather than referring to it and what it can do. Because we've had hints that, you know, it exists, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And so
fairly obvious hints.
Yeah, but like explicitly showing it and explicitly kind of going into detail about what it does, I think they probably would rather leave that for a different show, just to keep Arrow grounded in that kind of gritty, kind of dirty reality that they've got going on, that they seem to love and not want to shake up too much. So I was thinking that this would probably be the place where they would really push like the Lazarus Pit and fully explain it. So I don't know. I mean, again, I'm the same as you. I don't want to see Katie playing anyone other than Sarah Lance. Like, I don't want her to be anyone other than Canary. Full stop. I can't see that it would make... I don't want to see a clone storyline.
No.
I really, really don't.
Me either. So, ever. Not specific to this situation, just ever in general.
I mean, I will say that, you know, Orphan Black has, like, the market cornered on clone storylines.
Yeah, Orphan Black has ticked that box. Let's not try.
Yeah, so I don't want to see it go in that direction. I would like to see it play with the mysticism that we're seeing coming up in The Flash more, though, and the kind of the superpowers, the kind of the more magical side of everything. I like the idea of them playing with that. And you know what? If it gives me Sarah Lance back, then you know what? I'll take it. Fine. We'll do that. We'll cover it in episode one. It's fine. She's back. And then she can pop back in and out of Arrow whenever she wants to.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's great, except it undermines the entire character growth of everyone in Arrow. I know, you know, but like everyone in Arrow this season, you know, I feel like if that is what they go for, it's kind of a cheap shot because she's a popular character. And if that's not what they're going for, then it's a cheap shot because it's a popular character and they want to bring the actress back, you know? I sort of don't see any way for this to work. That said, Arrow and The Flash, generally, I'm pretty pleased with how they handle things. So, you know, we'll wait and see how this goes ahead. It's going to be on the CW. They're looking at it for next season. And, you know, it's got the same executive producers as Supergirl. So... who knows? Like, is it too many at this point? Are we having too many spin-off shows?
I don't know. I think DC have kind of realized that, like, oh, our TV universe is working, like, really, really well. It's popular. We're getting really good results. Everyone's loving it. You know, I think it's a matter of let's capitalize on this while we can still make money out of it, almost.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to see Atom kind of get his own spin-off. I'm not really sure this is the direction I was thinking it would go.
No, so we did hear them talking about that. This was a while ago now. They were talking about the Atom spin-off, and I think most people were pretty excited for that, mainly because it got Ray Palmer off Arrow and out of the way of Oliver and Felicity. But, yeah, I don't think... Captain Cold, like, I think he's the bit I just keep getting stuck on because he's just so bad. He's just so corny and cliche with his stupid ski goggles. Like, oh, he's my favorite. I kind of don't want him to have a spin-off because I just want him to hang out on Flash all the time and just make terrible puns about the cold. And it would just be great. But who knows?
I don't know. I'm kind of every time I see news about this pop up, I find it very, very difficult to keep a straight face. Finding it very difficult not to laugh every time we try and discuss it.
Yeah, well, really, neither really of us difficult. Are succeeding, so we apologize. Or who knows, yeah. Maybe everyone's giggling along with us. And then, sort of keeping to the same theme, but over on CBS, we had our very first look at Supergirl. Very exciting. So we see the costume for the first time. What is the verdict?
I actually had a discussion about this with one of my colleagues at work. He really didn't like the suit. And I made the argument that, do you know what? It harks back to the classic Supergirl look. And it also keeps it kind of grounded in the kind of Flash Arrow kind of continuity with the kind of muted colors a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not like overly bright, so it kind of, it matches in with the rest of it. And I kind of told him to keep in mind that this is the first suit that she's wearing. Like, this is her, like, this is probably going to be her kind of coming up with the look and kind of going through everything and becoming a superhero. Like, that costume needs to have room to grow with the character, because he was like more of a fan of some of the more modern looks of Supergirl that we've got in the comics right now.
Oh, what? But all blue kind of, and bare midriff. Yeah, that's practical.
Yeah. And I was just kind of like, you know, in terms of like the costume, they can make it more practical and kind of take it in a different direction as the character grows and understands what like her powers are, her limits are, and the suit can adapt to match that. But for the first look, I really like it a lot.
Yeah, I like it too. I've seen a lot of people saying like, oh, it's kind of boring, but yeah, I agree with you. I think it needs to have room to grow. That always happens with these shows, to kind of follow the development of the character and how they're embracing their, you know, superhero personality or whatever. I like it. I think she looks good. I can't help but laugh at the cape, just because I can't think of capes without thinking no capes. And now Madonna. If anyone saw that, anyway, you can Google it. It's great. But yeah, I don't know. I think she looks good. I sort of don't know why people are so against it, because I don't think there's anything terrible about it. You know, maybe it's not the most exciting look, but I'm more a fan of the muted kind of take on it, rather than if they had given us that really, really bright crisp blue. And if they ever put her in like a bare midriff outfit, not because not people shouldn't have bare midriffs, because if you're a superhero, that is so impractical. That makes no sense. Do you want to get like stabbed in the stomach or shot or anything? Also cold if you're flying around, you know, that I'm very pleased to see that they didn't go with that direction. So yeah, I enjoy it. And, you know, they've filming has started on Supergirl now, so I'm sure we'll be seeing a bit more of it. And we'll keep an eye out. We'll see how it goes. We had so much Supergirl casting news, so let me just run through it real quick, and then you can tell me if there are any in particular you want to talk about. We've got Chyla Lee, who people may know from Grey's Anatomy, who's going to be playing Kara's foster sister. David Harewood from Homeland is playing Hank Henshaw, who in the comics becomes a cyborg Superman, so villain. We have Dean Cain, who played Superman in Lois and Clark, and we have Helen Slater, who played Kara in the Supergirl film from the 80s. They're both joining, but we don't know in what roles yet, but that's just, I don't know, funny that they've kind of already played these roles. To continue the musical theme that seems to be sort of pervading through the cast, Jeremy Jordan from Smash is going to be joining, and he's playing Windshot, who is a tech genius who'll work with Kara. And in the comics, he is the villain Toyman, so we'll see if that carries across into the TV show. And then Farron Tahir is playing the Commander, who is an alien military expert leading the forces aligned against Supergirl. And we also have a young Kara who's been cast for the pilot, and we don't know yet if that role is going to continue on through the series or not. Although, you know, considering how much these guys who are making this show like flashbacks, as we've seen in The Flash and in Arrow, I would not be surprised. but definitely we'll be seeing a bit more of Kara's childhood, I guess, in the pilot. So we shall see. It's all happening now. It's like every single day, casting. So hard to keep up. What do you think about all of these? As soon as I saw Jeremy Jordan was joining, I was like, is it secretly a musical? Is it a musical TV show? Because that would be amazing. Because obviously we have Melissa and a lot of the cast have this sort of musical inclination. So in a way, it would be such a shame if we didn't get to see any of that.
Yeah, I mean, I got super excited because I don't know if I was alone, but I really liked Smash a lot.
Like, I love Smash! That's the worst show I've ever seen, and I loved it. I loved Jeremy Jordan. Yeah, he's great.
So I saw that, and I was like, yes! Yes, he's in another thing!
Right.
And so I got super excited about it, because, yeah, as terrible as Smash was, like you said, it was so great.
Well,
I loved it.
And there's also Laura Benanti is in it, as we talked about last time, I think. So, yeah, there's all this musical talent. It's like, it would be such a shame if people didn't just break out into song. Imagine that. Like, the musical... they should do a musical episode.
They either do a musical episode or they team up with Grant Gustin over on The Flash and they have another karaoke night.
Well, CBS and CW, man, like, that is just waiting for a crossover to happen because it's all the same company. So I would not be at all surprised. Maybe they could get Captain Cold in on it to make it a little more realistic because he's such a down-to-earth guy.
Ice, baby.
Yeah, keeping things cool. All right, so what else have we got? We've got some Flash promo art that shows us Harrison Wells as the Reverse Flash. Over on Arrow, they've been teasing an emotional goodbye for one of the characters, but they won't tell us who. So Stephen Amell and also Colton Haynes have been posting about, oh, it's so hard, like, your emotions carry over into your acting, etc., etc. So this was on the 65th. Yeah, this was for the 65th episode. And let me see, some of people have been speculating about Thea. They've been speculating about Roy. Who else? Lance? Everyone. Basically everyone. No one is safe. Every time I hear someone speculate, it's like someone different. So who knows? We will find out. And then over on Gotham, Jada Pinkett Smith has confirmed that she is not going to be coming back for season 2, even though, you know, Gotham's been killing it in the ratings and they got that renewal pretty quickly. She says, I don't think so. She only signed up for the year and, you know, she knows that Gotham is going to be great going ahead, but she won't be a part of it. So I think that's a shame. A lot of people really liked her portrayal on the show, and she, you know, she kind of brings some star power to it, so
yeah. I mean, the other thing is, at least, like, the only thing in my head when I saw this was, at least it's one less villain to
right. I also thought that with the Supergirl news, I was like, there are a lot of bad guys here. I mean, I get it, like, it's part of the setup, but still. Anyway, you know, we'll see. We don't know yet how it's going to play out, but yeah, Gotham not shot on those villains. That is accurate.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for TV for now. We have a bit of movie news to talk about. We've got some Spider-Man news. We've got some Marvel Age of Ultron news. Before we get to that, it's time for our brief history segment where we give you a brief history of a character to get you all caught up to date for everything you need to know so that you don't need to read the comic books.
Everything about you just became so unbelievably clear.
And this time, it's a little guy by the name of Hawkeye. Take it away.
Orphaned at a young age, Clint Barton and his brother Barney left their home and joined a traveling circus. Under the tutelage of both the swordsman and trickshot, Clint studied archery and earned the nickname Hawkeye. After discovering that the swordsman was embezzling money from the circus, and before he could turn him over to the authorities, Clint was beaten and left for dead. Soon after, his relationship with both his brother and Trickshot deteriorated as well, mostly due to Barney's condemnation at Clint not standing by his mentor. Barney eventually decided to join the army after becoming tired of circus life and suggested Clint join him, but he refused. Clint eventually changed his mind but made it to the bus stop too late and watched as the bus drove away with his brother on board. After witnessing Iron Man in action, Clint was then inspired to become a superhero. Due to a misunderstanding on his first outing, he was believed to be a criminal. So whilst on the run, Clint met Black Widow and eventually fell in love with her. This led him to aid Black Widow with stealing Stark technology. During a battle with Iron Man, Black Widow was seriously injured, and Hawkeye rescued her and fled the fight to save her life. Before he could reach a hospital, however, Black Widow disappeared. After that point, Hawkeye goes straight and eventually clears his name thanks to Jarvis and joins the Avengers.
Alright, so you may be wondering, why on earth are we talking about Hawkeye? And I feel like I should just tell everyone, I told Donya about, I don't know, 10 minutes before we started recording that she could do Hawkeye for this segment if she wanted to, and I'm amazed that she has the ability to read that in such a clear and calm manner, because I think there was some excitement at that point.
There was a lot of excitement.
Yeah.
Being able to condense it down into two paragraphs, I'm so proud of myself.
Yeah,
to get
me
that
too.
First little bit of history into two paragraphs.
You did a good job. So the reason that that I said, fine, do Hawkeye finally, I guess it's all right, is because Hawkeye has been confirmed to be starring in Captain America Civil War with, like, the entire Avengers cast. This is basically Avengers 2.5 at this point. I don't know why we're calling it anything else. But, you know, Donya, tell us how you felt when you found out this news.
See, I'm very, very excited to see Hawkeye and Captain America. And this is, like, I'm really, really, really still not sure about the whole Civil War direction and the amount of characters in there. But for me, out of all of the ones that they've announced so far, Hawkeye is the most natural fit, mostly because he'd play really, really well off, like, Black Widow and Captain America and Falcon and, like, even Bucky and the Winter Soldier eventually, because if you take a look at, like, the kind of narrative direction it could take in terms of if Hawkeye and Bucky meet, you know, Hawkeye is being controlled and used as a weapon as well in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so there's an interesting parallel that you could draw there as well. So Hawkeye is always a character I've really, really wanted to see play into, like, the Winter Soldier storyline. And I was really disappointed, you know, when he wasn't in Winter Soldier, because I thought he was the other natural fit in terms of characters. You know, everyone else I can kind of take or leave for it, but, like, Hawkeye, I think he's right at home in the Captain America movies alongside and working in a team with them.
Yeah,
personally.
I mean, you know, you are 1,000% biased, but on this point, I will agree with you. I was also a little surprised not to see him in Winter Soldier. And I think he makes a really natural fit to work with that team, especially because, you know, even logistically, like, the kind of premise of these films is that they get together for the Avengers, but otherwise they don't really team up. And so it makes sense that that Steve would be working with Natasha and with Hawkeye because, you know, they're around, if nothing else. You know what I mean? Like, that makes sense to me. So I was a little surprised not to see him in that. I am glad that we're going to be seeing him in Civil War. Here is my problem with Civil War. It's not a Captain America film anymore. You know, it should have been an Avengers film. And I maintain that. I will maintain that even after I've seen the movie, which I'm sure will be great. I can't deal with that. I love Captain America. Like, I'm a Cap fan, as the world must know by this point. And I'm not interested in seeing a film that's half about Cap and half about Iron Man, or, you know, a quarter about Cap and a bit about Iron Man, and, oh, Black Widow's there, and, oh, Hawkeye's there, and, oh, don't forget, like, we've got Falcon and we've got Black Panther and, you know, like, we've got everyone in this film at this point. It's so frustrating because I don't know, like, I'm sure this is irrational, but I feel like they wouldn't have done this to an Iron Man film. You know, it wouldn't make sense, obviously, to do it in a Thor movie, but Iron Man is their real big kind of franchise within the franchise, I guess. And they did so well with Winter Soldier that I was so excited for Captain America 3. And it's just the more people they add to it, it's just the worse it seems like it's going to be. And we have another one now, which is that probably Spider-Man is going to be in it, which, you know, obviously there was a lot of issues when they announced the Civil War tag for Cap 3, because everyone was like, well, but you don't have Spider-Man, how is that possibly going to work? As we've talked about a lot over the last few episodes, we know now, well, they've worked out this joint deal with Sony for Spider-Man, and the Russo brothers have now signed a first look deal with Sony. And that begins in April, I believe. So Cap is going to probably start filming in April. So it would make sense that Spider-Man is going to be in that. So, you know, they said, oh, terrifically exciting filmmakers who are going to be working with them. And the Russo brothers said they're thrilled to make a home at Sony Pictures. The only, I guess, like, excuse me, the only sort of flaw, I guess, in this is that we were told, you know, a couple of days before that, that Drew Goddard was going to be working on Marvel's Spider-Man reboot. He was going to be writing and directing it. And he's actually the showrunner of the Daredevil Netflix series, which is, you know, interesting. And he was going to be working on Sony's Sinister Six spinoff. I know. Remember when people thought that was going to be a thing? Good times. Oh, Sony, you're so weird. Anyways, you know, he was going to be doing the standalone, I guess. So I don't know. But, you know, we've talked about it before, like the deal was that, that Spider-Man will appear in one of the Marvel films and then he'll have his own, standalone. So that would make sense if he's going to be in Civil War and then he could be in the Spider-Man movie that they've lined up. But it's also so frustrating because it's, you know, then it's Spider-Man's movie.
Yeah.
And I just...
It just...
makes me so mad.
And the Spider-Man news is just so all over the place. Like, one minute we'll hear one thing about a director and writer, and that next we'll hear something completely different in terms of the direction that they're taking. Then we'll hear something else in terms of who's going to be cast. And it's just, like, everywhere at the moment. It's a giant mess. It's like a really tangled web. Ho-ho.
Yeah, very good.
For bad jokes.
Yeah, you're right. You know, so here's what we do know, right? We know that the Spider-Man solo film is going to be July 2017, and we know that he's definitely going to be in a Marvel film from their current lineup, so, you know, something Phase 3 before that. And that's kind of it. The Russo brothers have signed this first look deal, so, you know, it seems to imply that he's going to be in Civil War. But then there are reports that Sony are also looking at them to direct the standalone film, and they're saying, no, it's going to be Drew Goddard. Like, that's what Marvel is saying. So no one knows, as you said. It's a big mess. But I would be very surprised at this point if they've gone to all this effort to get Spider-Man on board, that they're apparently going to be all sorted with their contracts and the rights and everything is all set up now. And Cap 3 is about to start filming and they don't use him. Like, that doesn't make any sense, especially in the Civil War storyline. So that's my guess of where this is going. But
I mean, the other thing that I'm thinking and have been kind of pondering about Civil War is it's less that these characters are going to have like big roles in Civil War, and more that they kind of need superhero fodder to put on either Cap's side or Iron Man's side. So they need like just recognizable faces almost to be the backup to basically the front runners, who would be Cap and Iron Man. So it's kind of less that the story focus is going to be on them, more we're going to see them kind of in the background, like kind of almost standing behind them or being involved in some kind of fight or whatever. So that's kind of the way that I think they'll probably take it, and then narrow the focus down to a few core characters. So it's almost like guest roles kind of thing, cameo appearances almost. Things that don't have like a substantial amount of weight that'll take away screen time, but that we've got like for people who aren't familiar with like other characters from the comics, like characters that have shown up in other movies before, people that like a general audience would be able to go, oh, I know who that character is, I recognize their face, kind of thing, without them kind of needing to go into a whole, this character is this person, this is their motivation, this is what they stand for, this is who they are, this is their history. It's kind of like characters that a general audience are already going to be familiar with, just to stand in the background while other core characters that are kind of going to be the focus of this movie take center stage. So, like, probably the same cast of characters that we would have seen in Winter Soldier plus Tony Stark. And I would imagine that on Tony Stark's side, then we will see a little bit of Spider-Man as well, because that's the direction that the comics took before it, like, all flipped around and got crazy and everything. But that's kind of the way that I've been pondering that it will probably go, rather than it taking screen time from any character in particular.
Right. Well, no, I don't disagree with anything you just said, but that's sort of besides the point, because the fact of it being a Civil War film means that it needs to be evenly weighted between the two sides of the Civil War. Yeah. So at bare minimum, you're talking about an even split between Cap and Tony. And that means that it's not a Captain America film. That means that it's a Captain America Iron Man film. And Iron Man has plenty of films already. So regardless of, you know, whether a lot of these characters, I'm sure, will be appearing mainly in sort of basically cameo roles, or, as you said, like very minor roles just to show, oh, and this person's on this side and this person's on this side. I don't think Civil War has any business being a solo film. If they're going to go about it, I think it needs to be considered, you know, it's obviously not an Avengers film, but considered sort of in that vein of happening in between the solo films. You know, it shouldn't be taking the place of a Captain America film, which is my issue with it, because I agree 100% with everything you just said, but when you're watching Winter Soldier, you know, Bucky and Falcon and Natasha, like, they're still supporting roles. You know, they're important roles. There's no argument about that. They're really important roles, but they're supporting roles. They're secondary characters because it's Steve's film and he's the lead role. If you're doing Civil War, then automatically Steve and Tony are your lead characters. So you're already kind of halving his time, you know, or the weight that's going to be given to that between the two of them, because otherwise it's, you know, if you spend all your time with Steve and then you just go like, oh, and P.S. Tony's on the opposite side, like, the Civil War has no impact. You know, you have to weigh it evenly between the two of them to kind of get through. So that's my problem.
Unless they're going to literally frame this as Tony being the villain and Tony takes the villain role.
But
and
they I don't think they can do that either. Yeah. They're not going to do that to Iron Man, you know? They're just not. Like, he's the star of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
They're not going to do it. Anyway, I have to talk about something else because it just makes me frustrated. Tell us on Twitter, what do you think? Even I'm interested, you know, I'm definitely biased because I'm a big Captain America fan, but even if it was any other character, I think I would have similar problems because, you know, it's kind of a semantics issue. Like, if you put two of the Avengers basically in a film together, like the lead Avengers, as Donya will bristle, Hawkeye's the lead Avenger, she'll say, but, you know, the ones who have their own film franchises, if you put them in a film together, I feel like you're sort of lessening the impact of one to give some to the other. So let us know on Twitter at Hero Hype Podcast, what do you think about this? Or am I just going crazy, which is definitely not mutually exclusive, those two things. A little bit more Avengers news before we sort of wrap this up. We did have the third Age of Ultron trailer, and we got our first look at the Vision. That's really the main takeaway from that. Oh, also Bruce and Natasha romance, which was hinted at in that, which I am not on board with, but I know a lot of people are very excited about. Was there anything in the trailer that you want to talk about?
The one shot where they're all, like, they all come out of, like, that massive jeep on the snowbank thing, and then they're, like, flying across the screen slow motion.
I saw a great thing on Tumblr that was like all the gifs from the various Age of Ultron trailers for the Avengers and, you know, a quote of something they'd said. And for Hawkeye's, it was just like a million question marks because he hasn't spoken yet in any of them. And I was like, oh, must have done ya. So,
though, we did get like, there was an interview with Jeremy Renner. I think it was either earlier this week or like a week and a half ago, where he basically said in Age of Ultron, we will learn where Hawkeye was during all of the previous movies since The Last Avengers. So we'll find out where he's been and what he's been up to. And also he has a really interesting role in this movie. And that's all he was saying. And I was like, okay, well, at least we'll figure out whether he's been hanging out on his farm or not.
Yeah, I'm sure it was Hawkeye was tending the crops and, you know, there's no Wi-Fi out there, so there was really no way to get in touch with him.
Yeah.
We'll find out soon. It's not far now. And we also had some Age of Ultron posters. They all look great. The character posters I've been really enjoying. We talked a little bit about them last time because a few of them had been out, but they're all out now, I think. So you can check them out on hyperbore.com. Look at them in the high res. They look pretty damn good. Although Hawkeye looks kind of half asleep. So,
well,
I don't know what he's looking at because, like, the people are behind him. But all right, good job.
It's his resting bitch face.
His resting murder face.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Thor director Kenneth Branagh has talked a little bit about maybe coming back to Marvel. He just directed Cinderella, so, you know, he's got plenty of things going on. He directed Thor, but not Thor 2, and they were asking him about coming back for Thor 3. So, I don't know. I preferred Thor 2 than Thor, so I kind of am not desperate for him to come back. But, I mean, I think that was just an increased presence of Tom Hiddleston, so I don't know how much that had to do with the directing.
Yeah.
And then one last thing to talk about this week before we get to our last few segments. Strange news, James Gunn, director of Guardians of the Galaxy, was answering questions on Facebook and someone asked him, will he be at San Diego Comic-Con this year? And he said, I'm not sure, Marvel isn't going, so I'm not sure I will be either. And then the internet broke, basically, with the thought that Marvel wouldn't be at Comic-Con. I don't know. Someone, you know, said on Twitter, like, oh, guys, he's probably just trolling or he's probably just lying. And he said, I've never lied to the fans. So I guess as far as he knows, Marvel is not going. Marvel Studios, I'm assuming he's referring to. But even so, this is super surprising to me because I don't think they have skipped a year. And a lot of people were saying, oh, well, you know, they won't have anything to show. They showed footage from Guardians of the Galaxy when they'd been filming for 2 weeks. They showed fully rendered, like, CGI footage. So they definitely, I was amazed that they're not going to be showing anything from Civil War. But, you know, we have seen recently, Marvel did that event last year where they announced the Phase 3 lineup. There's also D23, which is Disney's conference. That's happening in August this year. That's only every 2 years. So there is a chance that they're skipping out on Comic-Con because that's in July to do D23 in August, or maybe they're just going to have their own event. I don't know, but, you know, that will be a big loss for Comic-Con they're not there.
There's been a confirmation, at least, that, like, Marvel Comics is definitely going to be there. So, people involved in Marvel Comics are 100% going to be at San Diego Comic-Con. I think someone from one of the Marvel Twitter accounts said that. I saw a tweet being, like, retweeted on my timeline regarding that. But, yeah, the general kind of theorizing I've seen about this is that it may just be that Marvel Studios doesn't go, but Marvel Entertainment does. So we will probably be more likely to see a heavier kind of TV presence and stuff to do with the upcoming Netflix shows, potentially, and any of the other smaller projects or standalones, rather than the movies. So not necessarily that they're not going to be there in any capacity at all, but potentially that it's just not going to be movie focused this time around.
Right, but... okay, so I've been to Comic-Con the last 2 years, and I was in the Marvel panel last year, and I was in the... sorry, I should say I was in the Marvel Studios panel last year. I was in the Marvel TV, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panels this year and the year before, both years I've gone. And, you know, TV panels can be exciting, and they usually show footage, and the first Marvel one I went to, they showed the first episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They showed the whole thing, and, like, that was very exciting. It was the world premiere. But they're not as exciting as the Marvel Studios panel. Yeah. Has really set the standard for what films do now, which is Marvel always goes insane. They bring out the whole cast. They introduce new cast members that you don't know about. They tell you about lineups that you're not aware of. You know, they show footage. It's all very exciting. So I don't think anyone's concerned that Marvel TV won't be there. But if Marvel Studios isn't there, that's still, like, a huge deal, because they have these really, really long panels where they show kind of everything. And I have seen some people theorizing that maybe the reason that this year in particular they're deciding not to go is because they have Star Wars as well. And they've sort of decided they don't really want either Marvel or Star Wars to lead in to the other one, because, you know, one has to go before the other. So which kind of is the headline act, which makes sense. And, you know, they can throw them both over at D23. But it would be such a shame, because those panels are so much fun. But who knows? I really just wanted to see, as we all know, something from Civil War. So we'll wait and see.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be my first San Diego Comic Con as well, so I'd be really upset.
Oh, yeah, bad timing for you, huh? I'm like, oh, yeah, I've, like, been there and I've, like, done that, but it'd be fun. And you're like, no!
Yeah, this is going to be my first one ever, so...
It's a good time.
Please be there, please.
Anyway, we'll keep you updated on that. Donya and I will both be going to Comic-Con this year, and Hyperbull will be all over that. So you'll be able to follow us. That's in the first week of July. So plenty of time to go before that. All right, that's it for news this week. Let us know all your thoughts on all the stories we talked about on Twitter at Hero Hype Podcast, in the comments on this post on hyperbull.com. And, you know, just let us know what you're feeling, what else is happening, all of that stuff, especially Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and what's going on there. I'm very interested, considering I know so many of you guys were really loving Agent Carter. So I'm interested to see how well you're going at readjusting, I suppose, to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. after that. Speaking of, it's time for our quotes of the week.
Oh my God, you ever showed up, pal?
No.
This week, they both come from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I went for a bit of a funny line because I have been having high levels of Agent May appreciation, just always, but especially these last two episodes. And so I enjoyed the dialogue with Coulson and May after they staged that huge, you know, I guess, ruse of... Yeah. No, they'll never take us alive. And when I saw that, I was like, all right, this is fake. Because actually, I have to say, I did have a bit of a hunch, because I was like, May would never talk like that in front of a prisoner. Like, she's got standards. She would never do that. But anyway, when May was criticizing Coulson's theatrics, when he says to her, if I let you write the script, no one would say anything. And that is accurate. And then I think she says in the next episode, like, yeah, it was pretty funny. And, like, if I think something's funny, then, you know, that's pretty good. So, yeah, definitely that was my favorite. What have you got for us this week?
Mine is playing off the whole, again, the kind of Fitz and Simmons divide again, and how, like, Simmons has been treating, I guess, Sky and this whole Inhumans reveal as well, and her like, trip... Her trip on the crazy train.
Her post-trip trip. Ha!
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
Everyone's heart breaks, us guys.
Yeah. But it's when Fitz says to her, it's like, oh yeah, like I was your friend and then I changed. How did you handle that?
Bam. Mic drop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fitz laying it on the line. Yeah, I like how Fitz really has this together and Simmons is the one who doesn't. Although, you know, I've kind of always preferred Fitz to Simmons out of the two of them. I don't know why. Maybe just because Fitz really just doesn't have his life together and there's something sort of endearing about that. So I like that he's kind of, you know, he's getting better. Anyway, let us know your favorite quotes. And now it's time for Comic Corner, where we give you all the recommendations to get started in the world of comic books.
Sky, Drip, get ready for a large file transfer.
How large?
We talked about the trailer for Marvel's Daredevil series that is coming soon on Netflix. If you're inspired to read some comics because the show looks so good, then we have you taken care of. So, Danya, what have you got for us this week?
So, the first one that I've got is Daredevil, The Man Without Fear. Daredevil's origin story has been told multiple times over the years, but Man Without Fear's portrayal is still considered one of the definitive origins, and also one of the greatest stories for the character in general. This trade follows Matt Murdock as he transforms from the runt son of a boxer into a street-level vigilante. And it's also written by Frank Miller, which you will see that this list is very Frank Miller-heavy, because he did amazing work on Daredevil. The second one is Daredevil Yellow, which is set early in Daredevil's career and follows Matt Murdock's mission to bring his father's killers to justice. It also explores his romance with Karen Page and touches upon themes of fear and love beautifully. It's one of the wittier and more sentimental Daredevil stories, but still shouldn't be missed. Next one I've got is another Frank Miller, which is Daredevil Born Again. In Born Again, Matt Murdock finds his secret identity has become not so secret after Karen Page trades it away for a drug fix. One of the high points, and there were many high points on Miller's time on Daredevil, this story follows Matt as he tries to put the secret to bed and keep it from his arch nemesis Kingpin, while also trying to help his former girlfriend with her struggles. The next one that I've got is the Elektra Saga. Elektra is so intertwined with Daredevil that this series is essential to any Daredevil fan. Introduced as a former love of Murdock's life, the Elektra Saga deals with her return in both Daredevil's personal and superhero life, and they find themselves at odds when Elektra becomes Kingpin's chief assassin, and the way that it ends is absolutely heartbreaking. And the last one that I've got is Daredevil Redemption. This is a story that takes Matt away from his home of Hell's Kitchen, and this sensational read is highly recommended. It follows Daredevil as he's faced with a perverted version of his own beliefs, highlighting his isolation amongst his peers, and has him dealing with his worst nightmare, people seeking the wrong kind of justice.
All right, plenty of reading to get started. Yeah. And if you have a suggestion for someone you would like to hear about on Comic Corner, you can let us know on Twitter and we will get right on that. Otherwise, we will just keep arbitrarily choosing them based on what we feel like you might enjoy. Hopefully, you guys get something out of that. Who knows? But you have been getting some things out of our show and we know that because you've been telling us about it on Twitter. We've got some feedback from you, what you've been saying since our last show. Danya, did you want to take that one?
Yeah, so Madge, who I love. So
hi!
Madge says, requesting an in-depth discussion of the latest Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode because of reasons.
Tick. Done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yes. Fulfilling requests since right now. What else we got?
Carolina, I think it's Fiolina, says, after your hating on Ward on Hero High podcast, I will be going into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 2 knowing that I will hate him too.
Woohoo! All right. Doing well.
Yeah. And then Amalia says, thanks for your Arrow talk. I'm choking on feminist frustration with Oliver and have nowhere to vent. Glad I'm not alone.
Oh, you're so not alone. And actually, we tweeted back at Amalia and said, hey, if you don't have anywhere to talk about it, go and write it in the comments. And she totally did. and it was really great.
It was.
Yeah. So we had a few comments in our last episode. We know there was some problems with the download. We're really sorry about that. It was out of our control, unfortunately, but hopefully you guys managed to wait the couple days extra and you got to the show eventually. And again, really sorry about the delay. Gary said, I don't think I did a very good job explaining the point I was making. I'm not saying Oliver isn't privileged. Of course he is. And the show certainly has issues with addressing his privilege properly. I just don't think his control issues are predominantly based on his white privilege. And, Gary, I would love to respond to you, but I don't have to because Amalia has written like this amazing essay about Oliver's control issues and his privilege. I guess I would say in response to your comment, I don't think it's necessarily his white privilege. I think it's his male privilege that is the main issue in my reading of it. But, you know, I'm a woman, so I tend to notice those things more, and we all have our biases. Amalia wrote this amazing, amazing essay about it, and I'm not going to read it all, but it talks about a whole lot of really good things, like Oliver's relationships with Thea and Laurel, and, you know, the different ways that Laurel and Diggle are treated and all of this. But I'll read a little bit. So she said, I agree wholeheartedly with all of your points about Oliver's behavior. I only disagree on one issue. I am definitely not watching this show for Oliver anymore. Not even the flashbacks interest me. I'm just too annoyed with him. But the supporting characters are worth staying for. And most of the comments I've seen online are about how annoying Laurel, Felicity, or Thea is. Granted, Oliver himself did admit that he's egotistical and insane, but will he be shown as right in the end? Somehow I have a hard time imagining Oliver telling Roz, thanks, but Nyssa is much more qualified. I've got to go home and apologize to everyone I know, read up on white / male privilege, and go into therapy for a few years.
I kind of, this whole comment, when I saw it and read through it, I kind of was like, can I print this out and frame it and put it on my wall?
Please.
Because it literally just sums up everything beautifully about kind of how I feel about Oliver and I guess both his white privilege and his rich male privilege as well.
Yeah, and I think she also makes a really good point where she says, I'm not sure what the show wants me to think. And that's sort of the trap that I'm in at the moment with Arrow, where, you know, we notice all of these things, but then you wonder, are we supposed to be? Like, is the show going to turn around and as she says, say, okay, Oliver, like, you're wrong about this. And for these reasons, probably not. And, you know, that is a problem. So we shall see. But thank you so much for the thoughtful comments and feedback. And, you know, we love talking about this stuff with you guys. So if there's something that's on your mind, hey, let us know in the comments. And we know it's 2 weeks between podcasts, but we are on the internet in between. We can have a chat with you in between. So let us know in the comments. Let us know on Twitter. And if you're feeling especially kind and generous, you can always leave us an iTunes review. We really appreciate it. It's just another way for all of us comic book fans to find shows like this. So if you have time to do that, that would be super lovely of you. That's it for Hero Hype episode 10. We will leave you with our question of the week. Janya, what have we got this week?
So this week we have, are all the superhero spin-off shows becoming too much, or can you not get enough?
Alright, so let us know. Is it overwhelming? Are you loving it? Do you want your own superhero TV network? Actually, that's a great idea. Someone should do that. in the meantime, how are you feeling about it all? Because it just seems like we've got Agent Carter, now I've got Supergirl, now we've got Captain Cold. And assorted friends. So I think the show should be called Captain Cold and Friends. Or Captain... or Cold Comrades. That sounds like a communist show, but
it does. I love, like, both of those suggestions.
I really would like Captain Cold to be the main figure in that show for no reason at all, except that I find him really funny. So if you guys have a suggestion for what that show should be called, please let us know. It cannot possibly be worse than my two suggestions. But we'll be back with another episode in 2 weeks with all of the latest superhero TV and film news. And, you know, let us know what you're thinking. Tell us on Twitter, tell us in the comments, and we will be back then. Until then, I'm Marima.
And I'm Danya.
Bye.
Bye.
All right.
Hilariously, you added that question in. That was the one I had in my head to you.
What? Brain mind meld.